The Crude Life with host Jason Spiess.
Go to the phone line. We've got Dr. Stephen Hines, of course, Professor Stephen Hines with us.
I've been called worse, Jason.
He's the professor at What's the Matter You? Isn't that what it's called? Yeah. The old Rock.
That's one of my connections, yes.
That's one of my favorite cartoons, Rocky and Bullwinkle. What's the Matter You? The great football team at What's the Matter You? But anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about ESG University, not What's the Matter You University, but ESG University. And Mr. Stephen Hines and I, we go back 6 years at least talking about at least the roots and the elements of ESG. You know, it was funny because I was listening to one of our interviews from 5-6 years ago, and that was the first thing I wrote down. I said, geez, we were trying to warn people 6 years ago, Steve.
You bet. And we had got some really good thinkers to join us. So, and that would, you know, that's going forward, Jason. That will be available if your listenership is interested more. You and I can, we can involve many thought leaders on this broad subject for your listenership.
One of the things that I found interesting in the last week, of course, ESG goes so many different directions, and pretty much everything is ESG if you look at it. And that's one of the things we try to do at ESG University is we try to just take any topic and say, okay, how does ESG apply to this? One of the more interesting topics, though, is I just came out of Williston, North Dakota, where the Bakken oil field is. Of course, fossil fuels, climate change, very big topics when it comes to ESG. In fact, a lot of people say that emission management climate change narrative is the number one driving force behind this ESG movement. Now, when I was in Williston, I talked to a gentleman there who's been there for over 15 years. He's highly involved with the economic development there, and I do not want to mention his name or get into the weeds of that because that's not what is so much important. But when I interviewed him and asked him about ESG, he said, I don't know anything about it. And I said, well, what about your customers and your people that work within you? Because they're primarily fossil fuel companies, right? And he goes, no, nobody really knows anything about it. Well, then afterwards, I was talking to kind of the middleman, you know, and I said, I don't believe him for a minute. And he goes, oh, no, he knows about ESG. They just think they're going to legislate their way out of it.
Right, right.
What's your feeling on that? Because I got two different opinions on whether these states are going to be able to legislate their way out of it. What do you think about that, these legislative ESG battles that are going on?
Well, you know, I mean, even that question has some complexity, as you know. I'll take California. What they're trying to do with ESG, they're trying to codify it. It's called SB 260. And they're trying to do what they did with auto exhaust, and they want to be a leader in the country. So they're not even going to pay attention to the Security and Exchange Commission, who's trying to write the rules about ESG. Using California as an example, they are running out of energy for energy. They have made too many wrong decisions, and they're too far ahead of ESG because the federal government has to take control of this. California cannot supersede the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Rather interesting that California has taken the lead on being the maverick against the government.
I know, as if, exactly. Isn't that a joke?
Well, when I was in Wyoming doing the energy conference, there was a couple operators there that were talking about they were just going to go start drilling their own wells. They didn't care about the EPA and all this other stuff. And I thought, all right, finally, we're getting some mavericks back here in America. Now I'm hearing California is going to be the lead on the maverick. Come on.
They aren't. They can't because there's so much regulation between here and there, Jason.
I know. It's ridiculous.
And the illegality of them trying to establish ESG rules and measurements and all of that. I mean, it's just, Yeah, I mean, they'll get so many suits, they'll never be able to do another thing in their lives.
You know, one thing that California did do very well is they did reduce the amount of smog. So that whatever emission management went into the smog, and it was a multifaceted approach where you had plastic covers over gas pumps, and you had vehicle emission standards and all kinds of different things. And actually, California...
And I spent, like yourself, I spent a lot of time there during the 70s. Again, because I was involved with broadband and all, and California is one of the first states that really understood its implications. So I spoke and a lot of time out there in the 90s, or, you know, in the 70s, actually, and 80s, because of that. But really, smog, but I don't know if you saw the study, recent study for California, that all of the things, the emissions they've cut, now I'm not talking about smog, I'm talking about, you know, CO2, et cetera, that the fires, the forest fires they've had in the last 2 years has wiped out all the environmental emission gains they've had over the last 18 years.
Just did a story this morning on that, about 18 years of emission management wiped out by forest fires, which at the end of the day, now correct me if I'm wrong, if they ESG'd it, boiled it down to the root, it had to do with renewables, subsidies, cutbacks, regulations, and
underfunding for forest services.
Yeah, it had to do with tree trimming, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they had a state commission about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that came back and did a study, and they said to the state government, how long do you think you can support with $3 or $4 billion or multiples for the renewable industries and only spend $300 million or less on forest management? Actually, it was $30 million, so it was 1/100th of what they're spending for renewables. So, I mean, a lot of people who know, I have a copy of that report if you're interested. But it really, it's chapter and verse about how many mistakes California has made in and around their need to feel like they're the cleanest kid on the block.
I want to go back to the legislate out of the ESG. We've got Texas, who has led the way with kind of an architect and a blueprint behind how to do it. They haven't done it yet, but they've kind of taken that next legal step. The comptroller's coming out with a list of some companies. We have Florida. We have
that's more anti-ESG than it is ESG.
But it's ESG related, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It is
anti-position.
But it is. It is. I guess it's anti-ESG. But
you bet. Well, there are 19 states who are doing the same thing right now.
But at the same time, I look at it this way. If it's going to be, if the ESG is a foregone conclusion, then it is ESG, and they're going to have the right and the control over the narrative. They're not going to allow somebody to discriminate against legal companies, that type of thing. That's, to me, what Texas, Florida, and Oklahoma is trying to do, with a big protection behind the fossil fuel industry, obviously. But
you know, it's down to fiduciary responsibility.
So
about the people who vend these ESG funds, they have to represent investors in a fiduciarily sound way, and favoring ESG over other investments, including oil and gas, is something that'll get them sued 100 times over, Jason.
It's irresponsible and extremely cavalier with other people's lives.
It especially won't happen,
especially when all the people making the decisions and the moves have got numerous safety nets
with each other.
Numerous
conflicts of interest all over the place.
Exactly. A conflict of interest means they've got their own manufactured safety net at the end of the day. But my question is this. When you take a look at it, I really think the comparison should be with controversial sports nicknames. When you take a look at...
good luck with that.
Well, when you look, there are states that tried to legislate their way out of controversial sports nicknames. And I'm sorry, but the controversial sports nickname is the letter S in ESG. So if they couldn't even get by the controversial sports nicknames... It makes me wonder if they can get by the ESG thing.
There are just too many. There are too many ways of risk being involved whether it's with Wall Street or the SEC or federal regulation or state regulation. One thing that the green community taught the rest of us is you can delay anything if you sue, and as long as you don't have to pay the people you're suing's costs, it's a very valuable way of slowing and stopping things from happening. And that methodology is going to come back and haunt the green community because it's going to be used against them, Jason.
Well, I agree. But I do think putting your head in the sand, which a lot of the oil and gas community and the fossil fuel community is starting to do, they're starting to act like it doesn't exist, which I get that strategy, but it didn't work well for coal.
Well, because everything is evolving so quickly right now that ESG has gone from a back burner to, as you know, boiling hot right now, especially over the last year or so. There was a new study done out of the NYU and I sent it to you, in fact. It's a corporate survey of directors of large corporations. And they... And this was done, obviously, without people's names attached in any way of embarrassing people. But almost 50% of directors on major corporations know little to nothing about ESG.
I also saw where there was a big increase in ESG sustainability reports filed this year with the SEC, too.
That's where it gets very interesting, because you have advocates, you have some that are doing it because they think it's the right thing to do. Then you have a whole group of people who are doing it because they have the chance to make money.
Well,
and how separate those two out?
Steve, this is where I think the ESG becomes a very big issue, and this is why I think the individuals who are trying to ignore it by sticking their head in their sand, that they think they can legislate out. This is why I think it's going to fail, is because, let me finish. So
yeah.
What you have is you have a ton of, let's just call them drone workers. They're workers that are going to work and they're doing their job and they're doing it very well. Well, they're filing the ESG report by doing their job very well. So they're advancing that narrative where the other people side is ignoring it, so to speak. When you're advancing it and moving that momentum along, that's a tough boulder to stop moving down the hill. That's what I'm trying to say is...
Well, I think more... I mean, it's being talked on even the financial, Fox and CNN. I mean, it's a in wide discussion right now. So neither side... I'm trying to think of this professor, and I think he's from Harvard. I just sent it to you. A Clusis... I think that's how it's pronounced. But he divides them into three groups. He refers to the green jihadists, the middle ground, which he considers himself in, and the flat earthers. And he suggests, and you are suggesting, and I certainly believe, that neither of the extremes are going to win this. This is going to be decided between the goalposts. And it's going to involve more than just environmental groups, NGOs, private foundations. It's going to include agencies, but it's also going to include the private sector. As I said to, I belong a long time to NARUC, and they had a meeting down in North New Mexico. And a guy, very prominent, he was the head of environmental for all of NARUC, which included all 50 states. And I raised my hand and I said, how do you expect to regulate an industry where they have the scientists, they have the bodies, they have the money, and they have the expertise? How are you going to regulate people who know more and have more funding than you ever will? And he had no answer for that. So that's regulators... are really stuck accepting the fact that they're going to have to do a light-handed regulation, and they can't expect to be able to regulate closely or tightly on any of these things because they're not prepared. They're not designed to do it.
Last week on the weekly call, one of the weekly columns we have at ESGU,
I read them, just so you know. I read them.
ESGU.org. Of course, you can also find it on Substack.
Yep. But you're right, just for the record.
One of the comments that we made was that for every ESG conference, there is zero anti-ESG conferences. So on one hand, you've got a few people that are being loud about anti-ESG, but really, there's no support. There's no government. There's no government support. There's no private sector support. There isn't anybody that is. No, not really. They're doing a couple things. But what I see, Steve, and this is where I go back to, that they believe they can legislate out of it rather than trying to connect with the people and trying to that's what I'm saying. They're not connecting with the people. They're just going to try to.
Loser strategy. You know, those in the oil and gas who play that game are going to lose.
Absolutely. They're going to. So that's what I'm wondering is that, you know.
Let me take a step back because I'm trying to let you talk, but I have a lot to say, as you know.
Go nuts.
Anyway, Wall Street, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal today that it isn't just the right, so-called right wing who's against ESG, but a whole community of Wall Street and banking who now have begun to understand the implications of ESG and what it entails are now coming out. So this is it's rapidly becoming apolitical and more to do with economics and economic development and environmental, a compromise between all of them to meet in the middle where it's acceptable to all communities. You know, with they may have to have their nose plugs on, but they're not going to be able to get it done by being an extremist in any direction.
You sent me
right now is wide awake to that story and education right now and what one of the things you and I can do for the private sector, including North Dakota or the Bakken oil and gas community, we've got to get them up to speed because the people who are pretending that it doesn't exist or don't know anything about it are going to ultimately pay the price.
What's this email you sent me? Oil companies abandoning their oil fields. What's that all about?
Actually, I like the headline. You know, right now they're looking for news, Jason, and you know, you're getting back to what you were saying about ESG conferences. I did internet back in its beginnings, right? 1998, 1999, 2000. They had so many conferences for internet broadband and all the implications. Guess what? About 5% of those companies survive to today. That's where the promotional, the PR money is going right now, to ESG. But it isn't, it's really going for the superficial things, and there's going to be a huge shakeout, including with law firms and accounting firms who are going to try and make money off of ESG. Because all of these filings are going to have to be approved by a third party, Jason. So it's full employment for lawyers and accountants and lobbyists and, you know, journalists who know little or nothing about it. So that doesn't surprise me that there's, you know, if you do a search, I have ESG on my searches and, you know, there are 10 stories for, you know, every day for ESG. And there are little or none about, and they're starting to show up a bit. A little more about the what some people are calling anti-ESG, but I would call a more sane approach to energy. They are starting to show up because it's more and more widely discussed. And so all of a sudden right now, this is no longer a regional issue like with the Bakken or, you know, with the Marcellus or California. This is for everybody. To make this work is going to have to be agreed to by the international community of 208 countries.
So I can tell you what our top story tomorrow is going to be. It is going to be, well, you know, if Apple is going to start tracking people's ESG scores and carbon emission gas scores and that sort of thing, this in the same way the Fitbit app was accepted into people's lives, this ESG Apple app that they're talking about, that's going to be what's going to usher it in right there.
Well, you know, but they're, you know, and if I sent you all of the stories being printed about industries or organizations getting involved in ESG. So, I mean, that's certainly true throughout.
No, what I see, though, is I see Apple actually working with the government in order to come up with the algorithm and the system and the app and all that stuff.
That's going to be a pretty sight. Without the private sector, that makes no sense at all, and it'll never happen, Jason.
Oh, boy, I tell you, these public-private partnerships now, that's the rage.
Well, trends and rages are not the same as sort of coherent, long-term thinking, a step by step instead of trying to do everything at once, like they're trying to do right now. It's not going to happen. They haven't even solved the problem, the accounting problem, or how do you measure what the value or the risk involved with social or governance or environmental, even more so. How do they measure in real time so that you can trade it, the accounting on how many emissions were removed? They can't do it, Jason.
But
there's no methodology to do ESG right now for all this conversation. And Apple is still, I saw that story, I read the story. I've been watching them carefully. That's more of a publicity, a PR stunt, Jason, with some chances of succeeding. But it's more for the PR than it is to make a new business.
Well, over in China, they do have an app that all the citizens have
What's
to
that?
Have. In China, they do have an app that all the citizens have to download. They were required during COVID. And they have to put in their daily, wherever they're going to go, and then the government tells them if it's okay or not based on whatever algorithms that they have. And that is starting to be, you know, more ESG-related with the climate stuff because it's a social media score. Now, the Ukraine...
More political. It's not even a social media.
Oh, without a doubt. I know that.
All lying there. They still have 20 million people are still locked down, Jason.
And that's fine, Steve. Don't go that direction. What I'm doing.
Done by one man.
I'm trying to cite an example of why
that's
I think.
Not a good one.
Why
that's
I think. Oh, I think it is. When everybody has to do an app, that's a big one. And then Ukraine, they're not required to do it too. They have everything on their app.
And they can pass all the legal tests. They have so many legal tests ahead of them. It's enough to make $1,000 an hour attorney have a wet dream.
Well, in North Dakota, the governor, he's been trying to get all the residents to download Bill Gates's COVID tracking app. And
politics is not good. If politics drives this, and you may be right, but it will put us back in the 20th century, Jason.
Well, mark my word, I believe that is the story of the day right here.
China is an example. There's only one guy making any of those decisions and what they report. So you can't even trust what they're doing. So, and they're using it for political purposes to control their lives. Do you think America or Europe would stand for that, the population? Do you think?
I'm not sure, but they're requiring the Ukraine, and they're doing it under the guise of war. Everybody has to have a certain app.
Well, not under the guise of war. There are thousands of people dying, so that's a little unfair.
That is true. That is insensitive, apologize.
The stakes are big in Ukraine, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
that goes for Western Europe and the Western world as we know it. That's on the table. So, that to me, when it's all done, Ukraine went from a socialist government back to private industry after they got their own freedom. So they proved that the private sector is much better at growing an economy than any kind of state or national sort of regulation can. Right now, again, we talk with each other sanely, and I understand what you're saying, but I don't want to ignore it. But a lot of this is just sort of what's on the media's tongue right now, and that as you and I, you've been doing this for how long?
Which part, the ESG?
No, doing the Bakken Energy.
Oh, we've been doing the Bakken for 10 years, but I've been doing
at least media
for over 30. Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, so it's an evolution, and you and I have been a witness to it, but it's not going to be transformed by these lightweights or this superficial way of trying to a way of valuing energy or social or governance. You know, the complexities there and the legal loopholes, the greenwashing, what I call the green wishing, that is people who wish that will happen, is just enormous, but it's not going to survive, you know, the hard-boiled approach to capital allocation, capital formation, employees, economic development, you know, wasting government money, you know, I mean, the government is so open for suit, and it's starting to happen right now. The agencies are getting sued for their policies by the private sector because they don't pass legal muster. But one of the things I'm hoping you and I can do over time, because I'm starting to get people who are interested in this kind of discussion, and I think they'd like to have both sides. So one of the things you and I can do is we can talk about it from our point of view and our experience, and we can listen to each other, and we don't necessarily have to agree, but at least both sides are being discussed, which is not happening out there very often right now, Jason. The people who are writing about ESG are definitely advocates, so they rarely have ever used any discussion or people from the other side of the argument to balance out what's being discussed right now.
Well, I can tell you from my experience that over the last 6 years that we've been trying to have the discussion with the state of North Dakota and people within the oil and gas industry, it has been a very, very difficult discussion to have. And
me too, by the way.
And now a lot of them are acting like they're the ones that are the leaders in it. And the other side of things that really is a little bit disturbing to me is a lot of these same people that me personally tried to spend time to educate on ESG have now politicized it. They've now made it a Republican-Democrat thing when it didn't start that way, really. It didn't.
Nationally, too. It isn't just in North Dakota, by the way.
No, I know, but that's my microcosm. Yes, you're right.
You know, so North Dakota is sort of small pickings over what's being discussed out in Washington or over in Brussels right now. And it really probably won't matter whether the people were who understood the importance of ESG 6 years ago or 2 years ago. They will have to understand it now. Otherwise, somebody else is going to make the rules, Jason.
Well, and that's what I think is going to end up happening. And that's why I go back to the college nickname thing, because our state legislature actually legislated a law that the university had to keep the nickname. And you know what the NCAA did in the end? They just said, okay, great. You can't be a part of our league then. And that's what ESG is going to do. They're going to say, you guys do whatever you want, but we're just going to go do this.
Well, you know, I mean, that's what the NGOs and the foundations showed to us. We can do so much damage, and if I use that in a warlike damage. We can slow and impede the NGO sector or the foundation sector the same way they did to the private sector. That is through lawsuits and attempts to legislate. So, I mean, right now it is looking more and more like a balance. It's balanced between the private sector and the ESGs and the government, whether it's North Dakota or U.S., they don't know enough to do anything, Jason. They're stuck dealing with the politics of it, and that would be a hell of a way to run a ship, is to do it simply through politics.
Well,
so that isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen in Europe. I mean, if they have one cold spell, I promise you that there will be marching in the streets in Europe. And they are playing an existential game right now. They're hoping that it's a mild winter so they can get through with natural gas. And the coal they're now starting to use again, they're praying that they have a mild winter. Otherwise, everybody who's in office in the European Union is vulnerable to getting kicked out of office immediately. Because people are not going to accept that. They're not going to accept people, somebody in Washington having control of our lives, dictating what to do when they don't know what to do in the first place.
Well, I know I'm going to be curious to see when they're going to finally stand up to say enough is enough, because I've been hearing a lot of the drum beating for a while.
Yeah, who's they? I mean, who's the they in this?
The people.
Oh, the people. Yeah, well, I mean, the education is going on. You know, they've been doing a lot of interviews over the last couple of weeks, on the news stations. And one of the things that's emerging is that the U.S. population, one, is going to have a much larger than usual vote during an off-season coming up in November. Two, that the average person knows a lot more about these discussions, whether it's about food or it's energy. There's a lot more involvement. You've got people getting involved on education boards. So there's more involvement right now. So I don't think any of us know what the mood is of this country, for example. We won't know until after the 8th of November, when the people will have spoken. And it'll be a larger number, a better informed number than voted even in 2020. So that's my hope.
Well,
is that the public is by necessity getting informed as they watch their grocery bills go up and they watch their tank, the cost of a tank of fuel go up, as they watch the shortage of diesel fuel. It's getting where everybody has to start thinking about, because they can't hope somebody else will do it for them, because they haven't done a very good job so far.
Well, let's hope they listen to ESG University in places where we can give you some non-polarizing information, because right now a lot of the education is being done in a political polarizing way.
Absolutely. Well, and that's why I would advise that you take me on as one of your contributors, because I can contribute. Now, you know, your opinion and what you've gone through, you've got so much reason to feel the way you do. But you're only one person in a world with 8 billion. And all of them have a different points of view and experience with what you're doing. So, I mean, it's one thing to know what can happen, but you can't let it totally get in the way of making things better, but making sure you're treated better and you're valued more. And the same for me.
Well, in conclusion, what do you want people to walk away from?
What I want them to walk away from is letting the utility commissions or the SEC or the federal government or the president or the state utility commissions make these decisions without their involvement. But FERC right now has 19 large suits against them, or 18. And that is because they're increasing their responsibility and their territory of regulation. And now they're not just making decisions about interstate commerce. They're making decisions about regions, about states, about federal decisions. They are going to have to give up 95% of what they've been trying to do. FERC. The same thing is true with EPA. Their ambitions and the money is coming from the NGOs and the foundations right now, Jason. That helps explain why they have so much more PR and lobbying going on in the private sector. Because right, the numbers I've seen is this so-called NGO sector has 100 times more money to spend on this stuff than the private sector does. Because the private sector has to do all kinds of other things with the extra money. The NGOs, all they have to do is make sure nothing gets built. You know, one of the questions I ask of the world, and including Washington, is, what happens if your thoughts about ESG are wrong? Are you going to pay the 3.5 billion people who are living in energy poverty on a sue and settle basis for all of the things you cost them if you're wrong?
Interested in becoming a sponsor? Email studio@thecrudelife.com.